Open up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Monday, Groundhog's Day. And with that, let's open, we're trying to see how we can do today. We've got two bills set for public hearing, colleagues, not work session today. So we'll see if we can get through those and get you back to your busy schedule. So we'll open up public hearing, Senate Bill 135, and I'll ask Mr. Stembridge to give us an overview.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 135 authorizes the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, OLCC, to authorize import of distilled liquor ordered by and en route to the OLCC by certificate of approval. And it authorized the OLCC to establish the qualifications for that certificate of approval. You have the Dash 1 amendment, which was brought by OLCC, which authorizes the importation of alcohol for scientific manufacturing and other non-composition, non-consumption purposes without a license, with OLCC certificate approval.
Thank you. And we have Mr. Thomas Irwin and Judith Brkanovich with us today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And for the record, I'm Tom Irwin, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm the Government Affairs and Communications Director, so I help shepherd through the legislation for the agency. That's pretty much the only reason I'm up here, is just to introduce the subject matter expert for this particular bill, and then, of course, the next bill after that. Judith Brkanovich is the Director of the Administrative Process and Policy Division of the agency, so she'll be speaking to you about Senate Bill 135.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the time this afternoon to address this. What Senate Bill 135 does is proposes to require that out-of-state manufacturers of distilled spirits obtain a certificate of approval in order to ship their product into the state. That certificate would give the OLCC a jurisdictional vehicle to impose sanctions or otherwise take action upon it if there were violations of the financial assistance laws. By way of background, as you undoubtedly know, the sale and distribution of alcohol generally is by way of a three-tier system, and the tiers are kept very distinct: manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer. And there are a number of different laws that help reinforce that separation. One of them, one set, is the financial assistance laws that we're concerned about. Those laws prohibit a wholesaler or a manufacturer from giving money or things of value to a retailer. The reason for that is so that we avoid undue influence over the sales practices of the retailer, so there is not an impetus for over-promotion and over-consumption, and also it keeps the marketplace more fair by not excluding certain products. Right now, currently, OLCC has jurisdiction over all in-state manufacturers of distilled spirits, wine, and beer, and out-of-state manufacturers of beer and wine. The missing link is the out-of-state manufacturers of distilled spirits. So this bill, the reason we want to close that gap is that we are uncovering some instances, some evidence of, as competition increases in the distilled spirit industry, of kickbacks to retailers for promotion, you know, for purchasing and promoting their products. So we don't currently have a mechanism to enforce the financial assistance laws. This bill would provide such a mechanism by creating a certificate of approval, which is what is used for beer and wine, in order to import them into the state. It's the same thing, which then OLCC could act upon if there were violations of the financial assistance laws. Right now, we have nothing to act upon as it relates to the manufacturer, and it's the only area where we don't. So we are proposing by this bill to close that gap by creating this parallel certificate of approval, and the actions that could be taken could be a suspension of the certificate, cancellation, or civil penalties in lieu of one of those actions. This would give some incentive to the manufacturers to comply with our laws. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Judith. I do have a question, and by the way, would you just say your name on for the record, because I introduced you, but you didn't say it, so if you could.
Sorry, I apologize. Judith Brkanovich.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Judith, help me on this. I'm just a little confused about this. I understand the beer and wine and the certificates and the incentives, but since distilled spirits are all sold, I mean our retailers are all state liquor stores. So I'm just a little confused as the incentives that you're talking about there. I mean, I can understand Safeway with beer and wine. I don't understand people are giving incentives to retailers when the retailers are us.
Yeah. Well, it isn't only us.
No.
They can be giving incentives to restaurants and other businesses that sell distilled spirit products.
Okay.
Those are the retailers I actually was thinking of.
Okay. Okay, well, that's important to know because that was a little confusing on that. Would you, if you're doing ongoing investigations, I understand that, but if you could, give me a bit more background on what types of things that you're currently seeing in that regard, at least the scope of what you're seeing?
Sure. An example might be a particular promoter of a certain brand of alcohol approaching the retailer to encourage purchasing in a quantity and money at that time or another time changing hands, and then alcohol is sold at an artificially reduced price and in large quantities, and that doesn't come from the business operation of the retailer.
Okay, so like I go into XYZ chain restaurant and my gin and tonic is $5, but if it's Bombay, it might be $2.50 because is that what you're trying to tell me?
Something like that could happen.
Okay, all right. I wanted to make sure I understood what we're talking about there. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from a historical perspective, obviously distilled spirits have always been part of what we regulate, so from a historical perspective, why wasn't distilled spirits included now, and then why do we have to change that?
Well, I think a couple reasons probably. There's never been such a high percentage of the market purchasing distilled spirits. You know, there have been other proportions in the past. And distilled spirits is a really high proportion now, and there's a great deal of competition among manufacturers. Let's say, for example, vodka is very popular. So, and there are a number of manufacturers of vodka. So in such a competitive market, any entry into having more of yours promoted by whatever means, it becomes attractive. So we haven't before perceived that need to have the out-of-state manufacturers be regulated in this way, but now we are uncovering what appears to be some instances of that. Did you have any more to add?
Go after their representatives, but not the manufacturers?
No.
Not yet?
Okay.
That's the other part of that bill.
From a modern-day marketing, if you go into almost any store, Pepsi and Coke are constantly competing, mm-hmm. and it seems to work well in that market. Why is it that now, I mean, I understand in the past there was certain corruption situations with organized crime, those kind of things. A lot of the purpose of those types of regulations have now gone by the wayside. Now we're just talking about market competition. So what would be the problem with, instead of going this way, deregulating some of these things rather than re-regulating another portion of it? Do you see what I'm saying? Meaning, I understand the purpose of it 50 years ago. I'm not sure I follow the purpose today. And then to go a step further, I'm afraid we're going to be stepping into the marketplace that I'm not sure we're all that comfortable. So give me a good argument why the current regulation is actually a good thing, because if people are willing to give incentives, it seems like it'd be good for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. I understand the question. What we see, and I think, you know, some of the historical reasons have changed, but I think what we can see is that if some of the reasons for the protection, of course, were public safety in terms of avoiding overconsumption. And if I'm getting alcohol at an artificially reduced rate, I can turn around and hold promotional events where the logical outcome is overconsumption. The other side of it is sometimes these incentives are given to displace other products. For example, other brands of vodka. So it's also a fair marketplace situation.
But if you eliminate... Any questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you. I'm not completely familiar with all of the distilled liquor that's sold out there on the market today, but my gut tells me that the vast majority of it is manufactured outside of the state of Oregon. Is that true?
I would venture a guess that that's true.
So I can continue then. So then what you're talking about is a wholesale new regulation of the vast majority of the marketplace.
Yes and no. I'm not immediately recalling the year. I think it was in the 90s, perhaps. Licenses, liquor licenses, were consolidated and streamlined. There was at one time the representatives of out-of-state manufacturers were licensed, and the OLCC could proceed against them. When the licenses were consolidated, those went away, and we now, the only party we have, and we do this, to go against, is the licensee who is receiving the, whatever the favor is. We don't have the opportunity to go against the person who has a financial incentive in it as well. So we need some handle somewhere as a matter of fairness, because we certainly have that handle over all other manufacturers, both in-state and out-of-state, for beer, wine, and distilled spirits, except out-of-state manufacturers of distilled spirits.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yeah.
Just to comment again on add maybe something to this part of the discussion, Senator George. I think part of it is also the industry itself, as Judith has mentioned earlier, has become even ultra-competitive amongst themselves in this equation. And so depending on where you stand in the marketplace and what kind of reserves or revenue you already have coming in to use for advertising or other purposes, it does the unfair marketplace, the competitive advantage issue has been brought to our attention by the industry itself that asked us to do something, to step in, because the financial assistance laws have been on the books, and while we have been operating with them and using them to some extent, I think now it's just a different atmosphere, environment out there in terms of the business part of the equation. So part of it is our reaction to what the industry is asking us to do.
Okay. Any questions?
It's fair to say.
So just to clarify, but you've had the in-state ability for a long time. So, for example, my district, Hood River Distillery, they make Pendleton. They can't provide incentives, but maybe their competition could because they are created out of state. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, if we have no further questions, Senator George, I believe this is the same relating clause that we use to allow local beer and wine things, so maybe we might have a more receptive audience this year. So we'll hold this for a while. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 135, and we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 136, and we have Mr. Irwin and Dan McNeil. And Mr. Stembridge will start by giving us an overview.
Senate Bill 136, Mr. Chairman and members, shortens the term of server permits issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission from 5 years to 3 years.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome again.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And probably it's redundant for me to sit up here again and say who I am. But
do it anyway.
I will. I'm Tom Irwin with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm the Government Affairs and Communications Director for the agency, and with me today is, as you suggested, is Dan McNeil.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Dan McNeil for the record officially. I'm the statewide licensing manager for OLCC. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 136, which is supported by the OLCC and submitted by OLCC. Just to capture on the front end what this measure does, there's really two laws it affects. The first one is ORS 471-542. That's a law that gives the commission the authority to require people who are applying to either renew a liquor license at a business or a service permit, the permit that's held by an alcohol server like a bartender, we can require them to take an education class. Currently, that law says that they have to take that education class at least every 5 years. The amendment that we're seeking would actually change that time frame from that current 5-year standard to a 3-year standard instead. The second piece of the bill amends ORS 471-370, and that bill sets the time period that a service permit is valid. That also changes that from a 5-year period from a service permit down to 3 years, so it's consistent with the education requirement. Now, by way of background, if none of you have been bartenders before, Oregon has a requirement that was adopted in 1987. It was the first in the nation that required alcohol servers, both people who sell alcohol as a bartender or waitress, and people who own businesses where alcohol is consumed on the premises, to take a mandatory education class. That idea of having mandatory education was initially proposed by members of the industry, and they just felt that having a professional service staff, people who are trained in alcohol laws, would really help to promote public safety. Since Oregon adopted that, there's been a total of 18 states altogether that have gone to a system that requires mandatory education for alcohol servers, and we're fairly proud of that and have been seen as a national model. Now, currently, the classes that you take to qualify for a service permit are provided by private providers that are approved by OLCC. These private providers set up classes. There's both online classes that are available and in-person classes available, and they're also available in a variety of languages as well. Everybody takes those classes. Currently, we have about 28,000 people per year that take that educational class. Now, specifically for this bill, this was proposed, the concept for this was proposed by OLCC's Public Safety Partners. As part of our continuing outreach at OLCC, we actually have groups that we meet with on a regular basis. Some of those are our business partners, bars, taverns, restaurant owners. Some of them we call our public safety partners, and that's, you know, police and prevention people, as well as alcohol education providers. And we talk about issues that, you know, they see as far as the industry and things that they think that we could do better. And when we get those suggestions, we take those forward to the committee, and if everybody agrees with that, well, they'll move it forward as a legislative concept. Now, this one was proposed by our Public Safety Partners Committee, and the members of that include representatives from the Oregon Department of Transportation, their Transportation Safety Division, the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, or DPSST. We've got the Oregon State Police representatives on this panel, and a representative from the Oregon Advisory Committee on DUII. Also, alcohol education providers and the licensees are represented on the committee as well. That committee believed that changing to more frequent education would really help enhance public safety by improving licensees and alcohol servers' awareness and compliance with alcohol laws that prohibit the sale of alcohol to minors and the sale of alcohol to visibly intoxicated people. Now, OLCC staff agree with that recommendation and the belief that this will help improve public safety. We also shared this with some of our other partners that aren't on that committee but that have a stake in alcohol issues, including the Attorney General's Task Force on Underage Drinking, the Governor's Council for Drug and Alcohol Abuse, the Governor's Council for Alcohol-Free Kids, Oregon Partnership, and also the OLCC Alcohol Server Education Advisory Committee, as well as our alcohol server education providers. They also believe that this was a good idea and that, again, shortening that time between educational classes would help enhance public safety. A side benefit that OLCC also supports is the fact that by going from the current standard, which it's generally a 5-year standard, but it's possible under our system that someone may go 7 years between getting their initial education and having to take an education class to renew their permit, and laws change a lot during those times. And one of the other things that our alcohol education program does is provides updates on the laws, so people would be more current on any changes in the law than they currently are. So in summary, what this bill does is it just compresses that time frame from 5 years to 3 years for an educational class for an alcohol service permit or for a liquor license, and also changes the permit requirement to the permits expiring every 3 years instead of every 5 years. And we support this bill. I'm happy to take any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. McNeil. Questions from the committee. Senator Schrader.
At what cost is this for the individuals that need to take the class? I'm assuming they have to pay for it. Could you tell us?
The cost varies depending on whether you're a chairman and Senator Schrader. Mm-hmm. Cost varies depending on whether you're an alcohol server or a licensee. Our licensees pay $2.60 per year for on top of their license fees to help fund this program. Individual alcohol servers pay a fee that's not to exceed $13 when they apply for a service permit. In addition to that, there's a $10 fee that is going toward the permit itself. So an alcohol server pays $23 a year currently for a five-year permit. We're looking at minimizing the cost on this by essentially prorating that fee. It works out to the $2.60 per year that the licensees pay. So I think internally we're looking at adjusting the fee that they pay for an initial permit so that they're not on the front end paying more money.
Okay. Thank you. I noticed that there was no revenue impact on it. So, any other questions? Okay, if there's no questions, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 136, and we'll bring that back. We were pretty expeditious today. Mr. Stenberg, do you want to talk to us about our next meeting?
We have work sessions tentatively slated for these two bills. We need to get the fiscals especially on them for your consideration. Then we have three bills for hearing and possible work session from OSBEALS, the Oregon State Board of Examiners of Engineers and Land Surveyors.
Okay, so and you have your schedule from Thursday for the two-week look, so you may look those over and before we get to committee then on Monday. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we're adjourned.